Welcome, friends, to the Enduring Gifts of Marvin Gaye podcast, brought to you by your 26-year listening veteran, Jessica. Join me as we celebrate these enduring gifts, the songs of Marvin Gaye. In each episode, I will share insights about the music and recount life experiences tied to it. I'm hoping to inspire you to take a first or your 500th first listen to these songs that are truly the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye.
Okay, it's time to wait no more. We are going to dive in to the album. Oops, I just sat down. To the album, What's Going On? And we're going to start with the song Right On, which in my opinion is Marvin Gaye's thesis for that album. And actually, you know, if you just only needed to listen to one song from that album, it is the song Right On, which I know is kind of maybe a reach, which is what I'm going to have to break down and explain here. So, just some quick facts about the song. Written by Marvin Gaye and someone named Earl DeRuin is the way I would pronounce that, I'm thinking. The length of the song, 7 minutes and 31 seconds long. And let's go to the presentation of the album What's Going On in its original format at its original release date. It's vinyl, and we've already discussed vinyl has two sides, right? There's a side A, side B, and sides create endings, right? I've explained that previously, that sides convey messages. There will be the message that's contained on side A, side one, the first side. And then you have to physically go over to your record player and pick up the record and flip it over and place the needle again. So however long it takes you to get to side B is totally dependent on your own motivation, right? It's like, are you done listening after side A? Are you in it to win it to listen to the whole album? So are you immediately running over to your machine and flipping it over? And an element that I pointed out previously is that with this album in particular, the album What's Going On, super critical to listen to that one in your ear. The setup that we had in our house, I've mentioned this also previously, we had two huge speakers that sat at the far sides of our entertainment center. So we had this humongous entertainment center, because I am not exaggerating to say there were more than 1,000 records that were in my home. And so those just flowing from shelf to shelf, from top to bottom of our entertainment center, was the biggest part of the entertainment center. And then there was a space for the record player, but there used to have to be all of these cords that then connected all of the different components and stuff into the speakers to get the, you know, the full sound. And that setup just did not allow for headphones. Listening to the album What's Going On for me on vinyl was not an experience where I was able to have it flowing directly into my ear. And that is the reason why, once I finally did get this album on disc, and now the experience began about having it flow directly into my ear, my recommendation, suggestion, and just the way that I have said before, you're going to get all of the nuances is by having it flowing directly into your ear. So the song Right On. Considering that my episode previous titled Flying High in the Friendly Sky wasn't even necessarily the first discussion of this album. It was a discussion that was very necessary to follow immediately the episode that discussed Marvin and Tammy. And it was honestly that fresh new perspective that I had received on Tammy Terrell basically splitting Marvin Gaye's life into two phases, the time before she passed away and the time after. That was so significant. And the next significant album that Marvin Gaye makes after her death is What's Going On. And it just put this fresh perspective on the song Flying High in the Friendly Sky that almost pulls that song completely out of the entire mix of that album. And it just was like, wow, this song is truthfully what has to be addressed immediately following the episode about Tammy, because it is the update of Marvin Gaye's life at that point beginning and will progress from there until the end about just the struggle with drugs. And not to make it pervasive, but just to make it a segue, because it really is very poignantly that. It is very poignantly a very autobiographical update that Marvin is giving on his life to us. Basically saying about the first original thing that he's saying to us after Tammy dies. The entire album is the first original things he's saying to us after Tammy dies. But that song in particular feels the most, almost one of the most autobiographical songs that Marvin ever made. So, and I made a point to say that in that song, the message is, you know, Marvin's trying to let people know, you know, you're not alone. I can relate, and let's just overcome it anyway. And actually, so after I finished recording the Flying High in the Friendly Sky episode, I freshly listened to that song again. And I actually can't even really say that. Marvin really does not provide any hope in that song, which makes it all the more autobiographical. The song just ends. Basically, Marvin just pours out his soul explaining a reality of his that, as I mentioned, will simply progress from that point forward. And I don't want to focus on that. It's not, but it's a reality, right? This perspective that I have now just makes that song something that I'm not going to ever allow to just be an elephant anymore. In reading around to get to the place that I'm recording this episode right now, I've been just finding articles in general about the album, What's Going On. And one that I read lately was just so poorly written. Oh my God, I'm sorry. There's so many poorly written things out there about Marvin Gaye. Where, and I'll clarify, I'm not going to just leave that general like that. What I mean, and I've stated this before, it's that the writer is, in their work, presenting Marvin Gaye as some type of a character, some type of an icon, some type of a legend, some type of a myth. And therefore, you're reading through it, and it's as if you're getting just a, like, ingredient list. You know what I mean? It's like, there's no connection to Marvin Gaye was a man that breathed air, right? And was a human being just like us, not just some thing to be written about, and therefore not humanized and not spoken about in a way that makes him relatable. So, yeah, there was this one recently very poorly written and also very long article about this album. I'm not going to shout it out. I was a journalism major in college, so I'm a writer at heart. This that I'm doing right now, storytelling, is natural for me. And it's just my level of respect and admiration for Marvin Gaye that dictates, and as I've mentioned before, the vein that everything I'm ever conveying about him is going to flow through. It's always going to be coming from a place of respect and admiration and appreciation and adoration, like hardcore adoration. But even with that, keeping in mind, like, he was a human being, but I think the only thing that maybe if I have a bias about Marvin is that I don't allow anything that I've ever encountered written about him to be just blacked and whited for me. I always, when anything that I've ever had presented to me about Marvin Gaye, I process it from a perspective of I can't just take it for face value. I have to perceive it from a place of keeping in mind that Marvin Gaye was a human being, and he had, therefore, any type of flaws that any type of human being has. And that's just, there's nobody exempt from that. You know what I mean? So it's like, I always have to process anything written about him from a perspective of, after I just finished reading this, do I get a sense that this person has some type of ability to have a strong admiration for Marvin Gaye in the vein that they were just speaking of him about, which is usually as a musician, right? And too often, it can just kind of be glossed over, that aspect of it. And as I have mentioned before, instead, salacious elements trying to be the pervasive message that they're giving, that they're choosing to give in their conversation about Marvin. So, it was just that article that I read, and again, I think it was two parts. It was so poorly written in that vein where it was just like speaking about Marvin like he was something out of an encyclopedia, and it was so freaking long too, so I just kind of really had to endure it. The only reason why I did is it contained a lot of factual information that they did a remarkable job of messing up with their very poorly written little anecdotes. It was just horrible. So anyway, yeah, that's just kind of I can't even get back to a connection of where I started from when I got on this tangent just now. But let's go to the album, or the song, excuse me, the song. And that almost wasn't a mistake that I just said right there, album. This song, Right On, is the first song on side two, side B, of the album, What's Going On. And I started out by saying I consider it Marvin's thesis, and let me break down my meaning by using that term. When I was in 10th grade, I was taking a American history class, and my teacher used to make us have to write what he would call 5-paragraph essays. And so he was teaching us how to write. He was a really, really, really cool guy. And so I'm kind of surprised that, like, in this history class, we were actually getting a lot of English learning from him. But he would explain to us that, you know, we needed to be able to present our thoughts in a very organized and flowing type of way. And so he would always make us present our thoughts to him in a 5-paragraph essay. And so the structure of a 5-paragraph essay is that it starts out with your thesis. Your first paragraph is your thesis. And it's an introduction to your whole entire essay. And it's going to list your 3 topics that you're later going to write a full paragraph about. And then your final paragraph is your conclusion. So summing it all back up. So you have your introduction, which is your thesis, which is going to highlight 3 topics that you're going to cover. Then you're going to spend a paragraph on those 3 topics. So now we're up to 4 paragraphs. And then your final paragraph is your conclusion. And it's tidying that all up, wrapping that all up. And so I got into that, dude, because like I said, journalism major, writer, you know, I was about that, and it just really gave me a good structure. And I can't believe that to this day, when I was thinking of how I was going to title this episode and how I was going to approach the song Right On, it was just the word thesis was coming to my mind. And I even had to Google that because I was like, what does that word really even mean? And actually, let me look it up right now, because I've gotten my statistics that I needed right here. The word thesis, and I looked this up just the other day, and then I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and use this term because I'm going to define it the way that my history teacher defined it for me. But here we go. So thesis, a statement or theory that is put forward as a premise to be maintained or proved, a long essay or dissertation involving personal research. And then here's where you've heard it before, written by a candidate for a college degree. But, you know, synonyms, theory, contention, argument, proposal, proposition, premise, assumption, presumption, hypothesis, postulation. And I think it's that one right there, postulation. Postulation. I'm going to go back to what I said. The song Right On, if you only needed to hear one song off of the album What's Going On and get the full message of the entire album, believe it or not, I'm really going to make you understand that the song is Right On. Let's go to my previous episode, my preamble into just diving into the entire album of What's Going On. And I really needed to do that to just kind of speak about the album as the suite that it is. You know what, folks? I'm going to explain to you the fact that the album literally is a suite, and I have explained it before. This is interesting, especially when you listen to it on vinyl. Listening to it on vinyl is the real true presentation of it as a segued song. It's one song that just segues into the different messages that technically are songs, but it really is one song. And the only pause for the album is the fact that it was the medium that was available at that time was a vinyl record that therefore had to be flipped over. But if it would have been possible that Marvin could have put the whole entire 35 minutes on one side of an album, then it literally would be just one 35 minute long song. And so today is, let me tell you the date here, July 9th, and on July 4th, and just to point out, July 4th is my favorite holiday of the year, just period. I need warmth in the weather, and therefore, you know, a holiday in the height of heat is just my thing, and I love fireworks. That is just my, oh, so 4th of July has just forever been my very, very favorite holiday of the year. So 4th of July just happened, and of course I just had an amazing time. And part of what I was doing was, you know, just researching what's going on. I'm in the what's going on phase now. And actually, I was looking for content to put onto my Pinterest page. And I really don't know what I must have been searching for as far as videos, but now I was on YouTube and some random, I'd never seen this one before, documentary on Marvin came up. It was actually interesting. It was an interestingly produced documentary because there were so many parts and pieces that were a part of this thing that have been gleaned from other complete other documentaries that I have seen those in full. And I was like, okay, this started out with a portion that I know I've sat and watched an entire documentary that had the portion that they're starting this out with, and then they're flowing over into an interview with Frankie Gay that I know that I saw when I was 15, and now they've got a portion with this woman that worked with Marvin when he was in London in late 79, early 80, and I've seen her section in a very poorly produced other documentary, which is the reason why I was very, very cautiously watching this one, because there is no way that I'm going to put anything that's just scandalous on my Pinterest page. I'm not representing anything like that. So I really just needed to watch this one very carefully because, like I said, it just had so many parts and pieces that had been pulled from several different documentaries over the years. And at the end of the day, it wasn't poorly produced as far as its presentation that I just spoke about 5 minutes ago. Okay. It had a lot of factual information, with a slight little portion of some scandal, which at the end of the day was just, I opted that I don't really need to put that as any information that I would be presenting for people to absorb. But there was one key thing and I was just like, yes. And it came from Martha Reeves. Is that her name? Martha from Martha and the Vandellas. Martha, who sang Marvin Gaye's written song, Dancing in the Streets. Is that the name of the song? They'll be dancing in the streets. They're dancing in the streets. Dancing in the streets. I actually just butchered that, so you might not. They'll be swinging, swaying, and records playing, dancing in the streets. So that was like her hugest hit of her career, just about. I mean, that group had some other hits, but that is really still to this day a summer anthem, like, and probably the most well-known song that she's and her group are known for. And Marvin Gaye wrote that song. So she was somebody that they were interviewing for this documentary, and she said it basically what I just said, but she said it in a more refined way. She said that she pointed out the way that the songs on the album, What's Going On, completely segue into one another, but she said it like this. She said, it's Marvin's symphony, because she's like, he formatted it in a way that there's no pausing, there's no endings between the songs, and it's Marvin's symphony. And I was just like, Martha, yes, thank you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but you said it on a sophisticated level, and you just upped that to the level that this thing is at, okay? This is the level that this thing is at. So let me go back to kind of the ending of my preamble episode, episode 9. And I was saying that this album is the first album that is, for the very first time in Marvin Gaye's 10 plus year career at this point, where he is completely unleashing, right? He's unleashing everything of his artistic message from his creative, what is the word I'm thinking, center, right? It's like it's the origin. It's his creative, the origin is within him. And how long has he been carrying this within him, right? It's been growing. I was thinking about, you know, basically there's a saying that it takes 10 years to become an expert at something. I used to have a career in human resources, and so that's about hiring people. That was the aspect that I focused on a lot, was hiring people. And so you need to look at someone's qualifications, right? And then one of the bosses that I had, she just kind of threw that out, that, you know, because when you need to hire an expert sometimes, right? Sometimes your position can be an entry level, and so that can call for the kid out of school or the kid that's still in school, right? But sometimes you have a position that requires expert level expertise and abilities and skills. And it was just kind of this generally accepted consensus that it takes 10 years to become an expert at something. And I was just like, wow, you know, that putting it into that perspective is like, I could get that. I could wrap my mind around that. And this is where we're at with Marvin in this album. This is where he has crossed that threshold into, he's been in this game for 10 years now. He's been going at this for 10 years now. And I think at this point, it was like a twofold thing going on with Marvin. I think this had been festering up inside of him for a little while previous. But at the exact same time, I don't think that it was at a level of being ready to be unleashed yet, kind of until he got to this stage in his game. He was at expert level now, right? And so his first original from his Creative Origins product that he drops on us, he dropped it at some expert knowledge level, right? Even though it's the very first that is all him, produced by him, right? That's the distinction here, is that it's his first album that he's completely producing for himself. Now, as I've stated, I've been, you know, just researching a lot of things. So a little bit that of what he does after Tammy passes, before he releases this album, is he does produce other people. There was a group called The Originals that he wrote some songs for, and they had a couple of hits, a couple of R&B hits. And he produced them. He was kind of writing, but the main thing that he focused on with them is that he produced them. And another thing, and I don't think it was quite yet at this time, but just as far as like Marvin being a producer, just this occurred to me, he also produced or helped to kind of discover and encourage and boost the group Frankie Beverly and Maze and Frankie Beverly. So he kind of had a little bit of a hand in helping to get them up and running. So Marvin, you know what I mean? Like he was a producer as well. And we'll discuss that in future episodes, but he could do it on himself or he could do it on others. And he actually, you know, just kind of got his feet wet a little bit with that, interestingly enough, on others. So he did. He dabbled in just kind of focusing on being a producer with the group The Originals. And he had some good hits with them. So I think he got his confidence, right? And I think it kind of seemed to flow that, like, once he, you know, had his experience with them, he knew for sure that this was something he was going to be able to do, like diving into for himself. So let's look at this song, Right On. Up to this point in Marvin Gaye's career, I thought this thought I'm about to express occurred to me today, and I was just racking my brain through Marvin's career up to the album What's Going On. And it allows me to make this statement with some solid confidence that I'm accurately stating this. The song Right On is literally, at this point, the longest song that Marvin Gaye has ever recorded. At the time that he releases the album, the song Right On is the longest song that Marvin Gaye has ever recorded. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't feel like I need to go deep into his catalog and just make sure that I'm stating that correctly, because I know Marvin's catalog up to that point. We've discussed it. It's the Motown sound. And Motown sound songs, 4 minutes tops, right? I mean, they're a little factory spun, real catchy, real groovy, real radio friendly tunes. And there's nothing wrong with it. And I want to just make sure that I paint that picture properly as well to state that there's absolutely nothing wrong with any portion of Marvin Gaye's catalog from 1961 until 1970. There's not a thing wrong with a song that Marvin recorded in that phase of his career. I don't ever want to paint that impression. And there will be future episodes where I will be covering many of the songs from that phase of time, because they're absolutely gorgeous.
But what they're really focusing on is Marvin's vocal ability, right? Because he's delivering other people's written and produced material, which, again, nothing wrong with that. But let me explain kind of the process that I've been putting myself through to get to recording this episode right now. I've mentioned this before. I have a convertible Mustang, and I have been driving in it lately, just out in the country, listening to various of the what's going on recordings. I have a substantial selection available to accomplish that. And yeah, it's just been really important for me to put myself in concert, in Marvin Gaye, what's going on concert. So let's dive into that. Let me get to the meat of my point here about how the album Right On, in my opinion, is Marvin Gaye's thesis for his album What's Going On. And you know what? Let me just use that term and not... I would say I feel like Marvin Gaye perhaps could have felt that if he could only play you one song off of his album, What's Going On, he would play you the song Right On. Let me state it like that, okay? It is the longest song that Marvin Gaye has recorded yet in his career. I pointed out 7 minutes long. This is the first time that Marvin Gaye is unleashing his musical gift fully upon us. It's the first time that he's producing his own material. It's the first time that the majority of the music that we're going to hear from Marvin Gaye on this album has been written by Marvin Gaye. And I don't think that I even needed to just state the majority. Let me state this accurately. Every single song on that album, Marvin Gaye wrote. Okay? He wrote it with other people, but he wrote it. And that's a distinguishment from his previous catalog. You know what? To be honest and to just be accurate, this could be slightly off. It might not be completely accurate, but I don't even know if in Marvin's catalog up to the time of the album What's Going On, if he's completely written and released 9 songs. There's 9 songs on the album What's Going On. And in his 10 plus year career up to that point, I don't know if Marvin Gaye wrote and released 9 songs. He might have written at least that, and maybe slightly a little bit more, but I wouldn't say like miles and miles significantly more than 9 songs in his career up to that point. Again, no diss on that. You know, in this day and age, I know, just to kind of throw a little relevancy, a little current day relevancy, that girl Cardi B, right? One of the things that people are trying to give her a lot of flack about, you know, they gotta raise you up to tear you down. So hand in hand with raising you up, they're going to try and tear you down. You know, so she's got all of these accolades. She's got all of the record sales. She's got all of the popularity right now. So then a way that people are trying to tear her down is they like to try and really point out the fact that, oh, but she doesn't write all of her own stuff. Minaj does, right? And so that's a thing, right? It has to be a thing. And it's like, I'm going to stop right there. I don't give a crap about those things, right, that I just pointed out. But I'm sorry, you could still have a lot of really big hits anyway. And that's what happened with Marvin in his career. And so there's like no disarray going on with that, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, Marvin's entire catalog of the 60s, there's not a thing wrong with it. There really isn't. And it's just as important a part of his career as everything that came in the decade that followed. Like I said, there's characteristics to it, right? There was a sound to it, and there's characteristics to it. Marvin wasn't predominantly writing that material, and he was not predominantly producing that material. So it's just what I'm saying is that by the time he gets to this album, I do believe that this creative stuff has had an origin in him for some time, but I don't think at this level yet. I don't think it was ready. I don't think Marvin was ready to release it until he released it, right? So we get this album. It's the first time it's produced completely by Marvin Gaye, and he's written every single song on there with however many other co-writers on every song, but he's written on every song. And as I have established, and I will continue to be able to factually establish, that from this point forward, Marvin has full, firm handle on his career, and he really did have it on this album. Something I will point out that I have come across factually, and it was in this poorly written long article that I was talking about a few minutes ago. I didn't realize this. They explained that Marvin really recorded this album in less than 30 days. I wouldn't have thought that. I really felt that he was taking much more time with this one. I really thought that he was kind of working behind the scenes and kind of keeping it close to his chest and not really sharing this with a lot of different people. And then it just kind of, he was working on it in private and taking his time, and then he revealed it. But actually, when I read that, no, he actually, it seems like, from what I got from this place, and so, you know what, I'm not even going to state it the way that this person stated it, because they stated so many things in such a poorly written way. But it was that something happened, a conversation between Barry Gordy and Marvin, and it was basically like, okay, you know, if we're going to move forward with this album being released at all, because everybody knows, right? If you know anything about the album, what's going on is kind of like in the backstory of it. It's that, you know, evidently Motown didn't support it. And that's actually, you know what? That's why I struggle with that one. I actually kind of struggle with that. I would actually rather, you know, hear directly from Barry Gordy, because I do struggle to believe that a little bit. Based on, do you know why? And I think you already, if you've followed my show up into this episode right now, I think you will maybe understand what I'm about to say. We've already talked at length about the efforts of Marvin's that Motown actually did get behind and fund and support. And they were these non-selling jazz records through the 60s, four different exercises of that, and they let Marvin do that. And trust me, if there was something that was considered a gamble and a risk for Motown, it was those jazz albums. Way more than the album What's Going On. So I personally, knowing what I know about, you know, the work of Marvin's that Motown backed and supported and released, and as the records went on, you know, they were giving Marvin the instrumentation that he needed. They were funding him. They didn't keep it bare-boned. That was one thing I didn't necessarily point out about Marvin's very first album, The Soulful Moods of Marvin Gaye. I discussed it in the previous episode, but I was saying how I get the impression that Marvin was singing with his eyes closed. But here was one, like, very pervasive thing about that album that I didn't point out. The very first time I talked about the album Soulful Moods of Marvin Gaye, I stated that Marvin, you know, he had a narcissistic vision in mind, and he wanted to create a rich sound. He wanted to create a rich jazz standards crooning sound that he grew up on. And I almost had an impression that that first album, Motown, provided that for him. Motown seemed to have given Marvin a very tinny sounding piano and a drummer. And that is the sound on those songs. I think on one of them, they threw in a guitar player. Because on some of those songs, I can hear the guitar. My dad is a guitar player, and so on some of those, I can clearly hear the guitar. But on the very first song on that album, it's a piano and maybe some drums. So I'm just thinking, was Marvin playing both of those? Like, because he played both, right? Did they make him do the drum part and then the piano part? I mean, it's just so sparse sounding. So that was the first record out of the gate for Marvin, and it's very, there's no instrumentation to speak of on it, right? For what the music requires. But then I mentioned his fourth album out. It's called When I'm Alone, I Cry. And that album's beautiful because it has the instrumentation on it. They opted and they got behind him and they funded him to have the pieces that he needed. So those albums are so far off catalog, off course for Motown at that time. And they released them for Marvin Gaye. I personally struggle to, you know, be on that bandwagon and just all of this urban myth and legend that, oh, Berry Gordy completely refused to release, you know, and couldn't understand the album, what's going on. Why? You know what I mean? He could understand the other things. And I think he would be able to easier understand what's going on. So that's why I just say, I would rather really hear it directly from Berry Gordy, what he felt about that album. So I've read it multiple times by now, though, that the opposition to the album being released was so strong that Marvin had to get to the place of putting his foot down to say that he was not going to record another thing for Motown unless they released this album. Now, in a part of my research, looking for videos recently, I came across this. At the time, it was a teen show, and like it literally had the word teen in the title of the show, like Teen USA or Teen America or something like that. And it was this interesting little music show. And when, I guess, like week after week, they would connect with huge record labels of the time and then do a behind the scenes, a day in the life of cameras following inside these record companies. So the one episode they were highlighting Motown, and actually I will say this, you have seen this footage. If you've seen archive footage of Motown during the 60s, I was sitting here watching this little teen episode and I was like, oh wow, I've seen those clips before. I've seen Berry Gordy and Smokey Robinson standing there talking before, and I've seen the Supremes in black and white in, you know, the studio recording before. And it was the footage that had been captured for this little TV show. So they were doing a combination of, you know, before the show was airing, they had gone to the Motown studios. And so they didn't have sound accompanying this. It was just like silent movie footage of the camera following people around the Motown studios, the Motown headquarters. And then certain of the artists were there live on the show performing. And so now it was at the very end of the show, and Berry Gordy was there. So he was kind of speaking to the silent film footage, and then he was talking with the different artists. And at the very end, he's like, he needed to point out that there were still a lot more unsung heroes about Motown and at Motown that didn't have an opportunity to be, you know, highlighted and talked about in this little episode here. And so he went to the extent of calling out Marvin Gaye. He's like, for instance, Marvin Gaye. And this was, I think it was before I heard it through the grapevine. I'm pretty sure it was well before 68. But he was pointing out that he was like, for instance, Marvin Gaye. He's like, Marvin Gaye is our single most consistent selling artist. He's had the most hits of any Motown artist. He's like 9 or 10 hits, top selling hits in a row. So he's like, Marvin Gaye is our most consistent selling artist. So let's fast forward now to maybe the butting heads that's going on here with getting What's Going On released. For Marvin Gaye to put his foot down like that to Motown and say, all right, you're not going to release this album. I'm not going to record and release anything else for you. That would have hurt them. They couldn't call Marvin's bluff on that. So, you know, again, I struggle to just really go along with like the, oh, you know, there's no way. And then it had to escalate. You know, that's a story, right? That's going to make it interesting and fun. And I can't even think of the word, but you know, like a legend, like a myth. So whatever, but it gets released. And this is the first completely embodying Marvin Gaye project that we get from him. And the longest song that Marvin Gaye has ever recorded up to this point in time. I'm racking my brain on this one. I'm going to have to challenge myself to one-up myself on this statement that I'm about to make. The most unique song that Marvin records in his career. Can I go so far? Can I say that? I'm going to say it. What the heck is this song? What does this song sound like? What is this song talking about? How long is this song? How loud is this song? What is the form of this song? What instruments are being played in this song? And like, seriously, what is this, an opera? Is this an opus? Is this a symphony? I will say it again. What is the form of this song, dude? Like, this song takes you around the world in 7 minutes. And it is just like, this song is the most unique. What is this song? What is the song? And so I will say, when it comes to Jan Gay, I'm going to state that I'm paraphrasing. I'm going to just, you know, try and keep it as accurate as possible. I don't ever want to present, but I'm stating something that she said that she didn't say. So I'm paraphrasing, but when Jan Gay's autobiography came out, I'm recalling that one of the first things early on into her book, like very first talkings about Marvin, like this is about the timeline of shortly before Jan meets Marvin, is the album What's Going On is released. Because what? Marvin only releases one more album after What's Going On before they meet each other. So this is fresh in her mind right before meeting Marvin. And for the fact that Jan kind of to discuss, you know what? I in this second, I realize I am so on track with this episode. For the first things that Jan kind of, that I remember her speaking about Marvin Gaye, is a subtlety of a line that Marvin sings from the song Right On. And I will just have to, I have to say, it's, I 100%, I get it. They were soulmates. Jan Gaye picks up on the subtlety of the line from the song Right On. That's one of the first things she wants to present about her pre-impressions of Marvin Gaye before meeting him. They were soulmates. She was on that level. She was on another level of understanding with him. And so to the effect, she's pointing out the line that Marvin sings about in this song, Right On. For those of us who got drowned in the sea of happiness. And she was just like, what does that mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a very poignant thing to say. That's a deep thing. Like, what does that even mean? You got drowned in the sea of success? Like,
is that possible? I guess he's explaining that that's even possible. That's what I'm saying. Okay, so your woman, like, very first thing she's kind of going to speak about you, she's speaking on that. She, that's your lady. That was your soulmate, right? Like, there's a reason.
So let me, I'm just going to kind of drive home this point with a concert that was recorded, that was spoken about in, as I mentioned, this poorly written article that I, long article that I forced myself to read through. But I will go back to what I was saying, how I've been driving in my car top down in the country, is because I've been listening to this music that was highlighted in this album. So I'm going to get in, it's some facts, which are very interesting facts. Okay, so the album gets released, right? And then about a year later, so sometime in 1972, album gets released in 71, and sometime in 72, Marvin is back in Washington, D.C., where he's born and raised. And they, everybody, he's now gotten this, like, worldwide accolades for the genius of this project, right? And it stands true to almost 50 years now later. I know in my previous episode, I stood there for a second and I was like, it's more than 40 years. Well, I'm 40. And this album came out like 8 years before I was born. So is it 48? Can I do that math that quickly? Is it eight? Did it come out 8 years before I was born? I'm struggling to do that. Now I am not a math person, full so. I believe the album is about 48 years old now. A year after it was released, Marvin Gaye was back in Washington, D.C., and so his hometown, right, like they wanted to just show him so much love, so they declared Marvin Gaye Day, and it was sometime in May. So Marvin went to Washington, D.C., and he gets to meet with the mayor of Washington, D.C., and they present him with the key to the city, and they have a huge parade for him, and they're just making this huge to-do for Marvin Gaye, and that's just everything. It's like, yes. Well, to cap off the festivities for the day, Marvin Gaye does a concert at the Kennedy Center, and I have to break that down to explain, like, how huge of a deal that is. And like I said, this is happening sometime in May 1972, because they were saying it was almost like a year after the album had been released, and the album was released May of 71, so it's sometime May of 72. But I need to point out the monumentalness, the significance, the humongousness of the fact that Marvin Gaye was performing at the Kennedy Center. Let me give you some context of what the Kennedy Center is. Let me put you inside of the Kennedy Center so that we're sharing this experience together. Every single year on the network CBS, I believe it is, they have the Kennedy Center Honors. You've seen this. President Barack Obama, they've had Carlos Santana. I'm thinking of the ones that I've paid attention to. They've had Gloria Estefan. They've had, I'm sure they did B.B. King. I'm thinking I saw something on B.B. King. They did my Cary Grant one time. Audrey Hepburn came out and presented for him. So you know what I'm talking about when I tell you about the annual Kennedy Center Honors. It is, they are choosing to honor a class of people. So there's usually like four or five people that are being inducted and honored that year. And they're sitting up in the way high up balcony section. And then there's the huge audience down on the floor. And then there's the huge stage. Okay. Well, I just needed to look this up. Kennedy Center opened September 8th, 1971. So Marvin Gaye is performing this night in May 72 at the Kennedy Center. It hasn't been open for very long, but it's still that huge of a freaking big deal, right? It's like, oh my gosh, right? Like, whenever you see these people performing at these Kennedy Center Honors, it's a humongous venue. It's a huge freaking deal, dude. So it's like, we already know that, you know, there's this legendary knowledge that Marvin just did not enjoy performing live on stage. And so part of the poorly written aspects of this article that I came across is, and I read it in this article, but it is what is consistently in anybody's article. I swear to God, I was reading the liner notes from one of the versions of the album that I have. I have three versions of this album on disc because it's been released and reissued and mastered and, you know, the limited is. So I have all of these versions of it, and I was just grabbing all of my liner notes to read these different essays. And I read one that wasn't written by We Know Who. But the essay that was in that liner note was in the exact same line was used in this article that I came across online. They referenced this concert in 1972 to close out Marvin Gaye Day, and they say Marvin was late, stoned, and confused. And it's just like, oh my gosh, shut up. And I'm gonna try and not drop F-bombs, you know, for the most part. I use that type of language all the time. My brother classified me as having a mouth worse than a, what did he call me? I'm a pirate's parrot is like how bad my mouth is, because I guess or a sailor's parrot. But I feel like he said pirate's parrot. Like, I don't know. My brother just on the spot needed to break down to me like how bad my mouth is. And so he was just needing to let me know that like a parrot, the pirate's parrot, like has a worse mouth than the pirate even. I drop the F-bomb all the time, but I know that it's a sign of intelligence to be able to express yourself without having to just blend that in, you know, seamlessly throughout the conversation. So I'm an expert at doing that, but for the most part, I'm going to try and watch my mouth when I speak on these episodes. I actually don't really mind, though, if you get that impression of me that I am very skilled at using the F-bomb, but I'm going to try and express myself without having to rely on it. So I'm saying shut up to people who just want to focus on stupid stuff about Marvin. But it blew my mind, and it annoyed the heck out of me that I saw that exact same little paragraph there in two separate things. So I'm like, shut up, people, shut up. Shut the hell up. Because, no, let's state it about what I just said. Kennedy Center just opened, like, 6 months prior, right? 7-8 months prior. It's new, and it's a humongous deal until this day. Somebody gets to perform in the Kennedy Center, dude. That is huge. It's huge. It's on your wish list, right? It's on your bucket list as an artist. So, here he is. But it is, it's kind of like, I could see how maybe he might have perceived it to have been a little bit too much for the day. It's like, all right, it's a lot of pressure, right? It's like, come because we want to celebrate you all day long, but a part of you coming to receive your celebration is we're going to make you also have to perform in this humongous venue tonight too. Let's go into the very, very humongous significance of this. For the first time, really significantly, since Tammy Terrell passed away. Humongous. We know where we're at with that. If you don't know where we're at with that, listen to episode 7, the I'll Never Stop Loving You, Baby episode. That's going to explain to you where we're at for me to state that this is Marvin's first huge, like, legit big performance since Tammy Terrell has passed away, okay? This is humongous. And so, this poorly written long article pointed out some facts about that. So they did state, you know, that he's doing this performance, and I felt like they were the ones that told me that Kennedy Center had just opened in 1971. So, you know, that just puts this, like, pressure, another element of pressure on it. It's like, oh my gosh, because you think of it, like, to this day, it's such a well-known bucket list type of place to be able to perform, but it was like in its inception stages at that point. So Marvin broke that motherfucker in. Like, look, I'm gonna say that, right? He broke it in. And he's doing this
concert, right? He actually ends up doing a full concert. And this was a humongous fact from that article. I appreciate the article for the facts, which was the reason why I made myself endure to read through it. They said, and they pointed this out, and I would not have ever known this, though I have it. So that's the reason why I have been driving my car through the country, is because I have been listening to it. But I have that concert, okay? I have a recording of that concert. I hope you have it too. It is on one of those reissue versions of the What's Going On album. I don't have it in front of me. I apologize. It's out in my car. But it's one of the... It was not the one that was released in 1994. There is a reissue that was released in 1994 because the album was 25 years old at that point. That is in a black hard box. Not a big one. It's just as big as the disc, but it's a black hard box that the disc actually slides into. It's not that. Because I don't even think that was a double disc. That was just like a remaster of it. So it was in great audible condition. Then I have the one where this is. It's a double disc. So it's the studio released version. Then it's all of these alternate takes that they are all labeled as the Detroit mix version. So those are all on one disc. Then there is a second disc, and that is this concert that I'm speaking to you about that Marvin Gaye performed that night at the Kennedy Center. I hope you have that. Get that if you do not have that. And get it. Okay. I think it's on Spotify. Is it on Spotify? Look that up and see if it is. Just look up look it up as the Kennedy Center. That's the way that you would search for it. Look up Marvin Gaye at the Kennedy Center. So there's these hugely significant things, right? Marvin Gaye's breaking in the Kennedy Center. He's performing for the first time since Tammy Terrell has died. And this is the third key significant fact, and I would not have known this. It's the only time that Marvin Gaye performed the entire album. I didn't know that. On stage, in a concert, recorded. Maybe I need to put all of those statistics in it to be the accuracy. But there was just something that article stated about that was the only time that he performed the entire album in concert. Perhaps that was recorded. Because I know that's what it's interesting to me that I wouldn't have known that. And I don't know why I wouldn't have known that based on the amount of material that I have of Marvin's, where it's like, that should be something that you would kind of know. But it's just an interesting and important statistic, right? It's like, wow, why would not Marvin have performed that entire album in concert beyond this one time? That's an amazing statistic, right? Like, that's just something that I would not have known that, even though, based on the size of my collection of Marvin's material, I know that I don't have any other disc that is Marvin performing this entire album live other than this concert. So 100% and absolutely required material. I don't want to put pressure on you. You know, make a list, people. I would really just be making a list if things are not immediately available, right? Because I know that Marvin Gaye collection is not immediately available. I've continued to look for that. It's on eBay. Get it. I've seen it for about $40. But yeah, you have to have that. And you have to have this Kennedy Center concert that night, because I'm going to even like violate this episode to explain. The concert starts. It's titled 60s Medley. It's probably about 12 minutes long. And honestly, that's the reason to buy the version of the What's Going On album on disc that has this as its standalone disc, is for that 60s medley. If that explains to you, I'm just loving the intelligence that this is flowing with. It gives me a divine intervention feeling. I'm sorry, I'm not bragging, but I feel like, yes, yes, these conversations are happening in the correct order. I'll never stop the episode. I'll never stop loving you, baby. We got deep. We broke it down. The paramount statement that was made that Marvin Gaye was two different people in his life based around Tammy Terrell being alive and dying in his life. And then the previous episode from here, I explained how it was classified as he went into hibernation. He was hibernating. He pulled himself out of performing, period, for 2 years, at least. I've heard it even stated as longer. I think that this is the thing that gets hard to accurately state, because I know that there was a period of time, let's call it a significant period of time, that Marvin Gaye did not consistently perform. And I think that that's the only accurate way that you can state it. Because I've heard it stated as 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. I've even heard it as far as 5 years. But the thing that kind of makes any of those lengths of time an inaccuracy is that he does perform here and there during the time frame, the time span that anybody tries to spout off. It's like, oh, I can disprove that because I can point out this performance that he made during that time frame. So you can't say that he didn't perform. But it's like on a consistent basis, on a significant basis, on things that pushed Marvin beyond his comfort level, he didn't perform. I think we can accurately state it like that. And so it is stated that this concert right here is the significant, huge first performance since Tammy Terrell dies, where you know what it's going to do no matter what? It's going to push Marvin beyond his comfort level of what he's been maintaining for the past several years. Okay, so this is 72, right? And Tammy passes away in 70. So 2 years. That's what I've heard, 2 years. That's what I heard Marvin say in the biography, was that it was 2 years. So here we go. It's 2 years, right? And here he is on stage and we're hearing it. That's why I'm telling you, you have to own this. You have to be able to experience the Kennedy Center concert of what's going on, which starts out with this 12-minute long 60s medley. Because I'm going to point out something right here. This is something that's been occurring to me in the past few days, as far as Marvin the musician goes. I'm, for the first time myself, and I almost use the word in my career. In my career of what? In my career of listening to Marvin Gaye music? I'm telling you, I wish that it could be my career to all day long. And the way that I earned my living, I promise you there is not a more truthful statement that I could make. I wish that my career was working at just studying the music of Marvin Gaye. I wish that was my career. I wish that was my livelihood. So let me say it, right? Let me put it out there, call it into existence, right? Isn't that what you're supposed to do? So in my career, I am just now at this point myself coming to understand the degree to which Marvin Gaye was a physical musician. And the way that I just threw the term physical, I do mean his physical ability to play instruments. I am just now this year myself exposing myself to the degree to which Marvin Gaye was a musician, playing instruments, objects. I have, for 26 years now, focused exclusively on Marvin's number one instrument, and that's the only instrument that I've paid attention to that Marvin was a master at. Okay, so let me explain to you how I've blown my own mind about the degree to which Marvin was a skilled musician of objects.
The biography, the documentary that I pointed out in the I'll Never Stop Loving You episode, where I told you I was able to contact the director of that film. And this film, I even Googled that film after I recorded that episode, because I was like, dude, did I state that correctly? Did I know what I was talking about? Because I really stated that stuff off of the cuff. I just was remembering it in that moment. And I really was in my mind seeing my inbox email. And I was trying to recall the date. And yes, then afterwards I Googled it and I got it right. Yes, this man's name was Richard Olivier. It was in either the year 2008 or 2009 that I reached out to him and I conversed with him, asking him about what was this movie that he had made, because at that time was about the first time that he had released it. As I Googled this movie in the time after I recorded that episode, it was that, yes, he made the movie, obviously, when Marvin was alive, right? Because Marvin is in the movie and he's speaking in the movie. And you can see this movie on my Pinterest page. Go to my Pinterest page. I have a board. It's titled Marvin Videos. And then I've organized that board now. I've put it into sections. So there's a section of documentaries. It's in there. There's a section of Marvin in concert. There's a section of Marvin on TV. There's now a section of the little videos that I'm making to promote this podcast. So I seem to be getting some traction on that board. I think people are really enjoying being able to see Marvin as much as I enjoy being able to see Marvin. But that documentary, of course, this man made this movie when Marvin was alive, but he didn't get released at that time. It wasn't distributed at that time. And so there was something about that I was reading saying that it was about 25 years after Marvin had passed away that he finally went ahead and released it for, you know, mass distribution. And I don't think that it like has been massively distributed. Let me say that in air quotes. But, you know, I believe that that's when he like began selling it. And that's how I was conversing with him about what was it all about and was it for sale. And let me clarify what I found. It was stating that portion of it had previously been released. And I'm going to tell you where I saw the portion of it previously in 1994. And I'm going to take the time in a separate episode. I will actually have these pieces of paper in front of me. But recently I have gone through my own files that I have been collecting over all of the years since I've 26 years. And in 1994 was a monumental summer about Marvin Gaye material. And I have a clipping from the TV Guide on, I believe the date is August 15th. I ripped out the page from our TV Guide for August 15th because there was one night, it was literally three things came on TV on three separate channels about Marvin Gaye. And I just had to figure out a way to get all of them. One episode was playing at its first air date time, and then it was playing a couple hours. They were repeating it a couple of hours later that night. And then two other things were happening at about, I feel like, the same time. So let me point out what these things were. It was the A&E channel, A&E. I feel like the channel A&E did their biography. You know that series biography on A&E? I believe they did a biography episode on Marvin. Then there was some tribute concert, or actually, I feel like what they did is they played the concert from Marvin in Holland in 1976, where he's wearing the white jacket with the green stripes and the green pants and the yellow shirt and the really big tie. Somebody was playing that concert that night too. And then I feel like possibly it was BET was doing some type of a salute and a tribute to him as well. So there were just these three monumental things that happened at the same time on the same night about Marvin. And I believe it was the A&E biography. If I will correct myself on this. I'll go grab the materials another time. But whatever the documentary biography was that aired that night had
portions of this man, Richard Olivier's movie. That is where the first time that I saw Marvin singing the Lord's Prayer in the church. I saw that in 1994. And it was pointed out that, yes, we all were able to see a portion of Richard Olivier's movie released in 1994. But it was not until, I feel like it was saying it was 25 years after Martin's death, that Olivier decided to release his entire movie on Marvin. And that full movie contains much more material than was captured in this little bits and pieces documentary that was released in 94. Because I do believe that it was produced by A&E and that they had just used portions of Olivier's movie. So it has been, and like I told you, when I reached out to Olivier in 2008 or 2009, I couldn't do it. I couldn't buy his movie. He was telling me I could buy it directly from him, and I couldn't do that. That was too exclusive. That was too real. That was too, you know, Wizard of Oz behind the curtain type of stuff. I couldn't handle to see that. Do you know what I'm saying? I couldn't take it. I couldn't handle having that. That was going to break my mind. I couldn't do that. So it's been years since then that somehow, anyway, one time I did come across that movie. I feel like it was online. I found it online somewhere and I watched it then. But it was years and years back to where it didn't completely sink in and like leave a lasting, deep, vivid memory impression on me. So it has been more in this past month, 2 months. It's, I guess we're getting into 2 months now that I've been doing this. In these past 2 months, I came across the movie online again. And like I said, it's on YouTube and I've put it into my Pinterest board. But this movie, the full-on movie, which let's call it 2 months ago when I saw it again, it felt exactly like the very first time I was watching it. And I'm talking about my mind being blown at the level and the degree to which Marvin Gaye was a musician of objects beyond the mastery musician that I have always known him to be of his voice. The number one and mainly the main instrument that I've ever thought Marvin played was his voice. I didn't understand the degree to which Marvin was a master musician of objects. So in this Richard Olivier movie that I come across 2 months ago, that's feeling like the very first time that I'm seeing it, is very early on in that movie that for some reason, Marvin Gaye's walking down the street in Ostend, Belgium. I don't know why I can't ever say that country correctly. Ostend, Belgium. He's walking down the street and then the next thing he's kind of rushing up some steps. And he is just written on a piece of paper on the outside of some building. It says, and he writes it in his own handwriting. He's like, Marvin Gaye in concert or something to that effect. He writes his name and then I think he puts in concert or whatever. But it's on like this little sticky bulletin board piece of paper on the outside of the walls. Then he rushes inside to the building. And he comes up on this guy and this guy is pushing a piano. So then Marvin comes and he grabs an end of it and he's helping this guy push this piano. And so they're wheeling this piano into position. And then, so Marvin, you know, he grabbed it from behind. So Marvin was pushing it from the backside. And then just Marvin comes and walks around to the front of it. And this is how my mind is blown. I feel like I had never really witnessed this before to this degree. But just like that, so Marvin just walks from the back, he walks up to the front of the piano without any hesitation. He just, without any type of positioning, thinking, he's just fingers on the piano and he's playing octaves. And he's on the left and he's on the right and he's just busting out this piano, dude. And I'm looking at him and he's playing Come Get to This. And he's fully playing the song and he's like adding stuff to the song, then he's immediately singing along to himself playing the song, and I'm watching, and he's standing up, and the guy is still kind of pushing the piano, and then Or he's not necessarily, I don't think the man is still pushing the piano, but like he's all around Marvin, and then he like slides a stool in for him, and then because Marvin's standing up and playing it, and then he's just kind of like, you know, being not just left alone to play the piano, but then the man gives him a stool, and then he finally is sitting down, and he is just tearing up this piano. And I just really had never witnessed Marvin attacking that instrument like that. I did not know like how, like the degree to which he was a masterful musician of objects, because, well, he was. So that's something to know. So to elaborate on that, to continue on that topic, as I've been reading my various versions of what's going on, one of the versions I had, I'm looking at it, and it's to the credits, you know, the instrumentation credits. And it lists piano, Marvin Gaye. Marvin plays the piano on the entire album of What's Going On. I guess I've known that, but never paid attention to it. I've known that and never paid attention. So tonight, as I was driving in the country, I went really far tonight too. It was so beautiful. I'm going to blame the weather more than Marvin, but I just was paying so hard attention to the studio version of What's Going On. Paying attention to piano on it, because I was like, wow, Marvin is playing all of the piano on the album What's Going On. And I was just really studying for where am I hearing piano in these songs. And it's such a heavily instrumentated album. There's so much instrumentation going on so many of those songs that piano is not the predominant instrument that you're hearing on a lot of those songs. But it is on Right On. I'm not going all the way around the world. This is on topic. This is the topic format that I deliver these episodes in. But yeah, on the song Right On, piano is pretty predominant on that. And that's all Marvin. In the concert at the Kennedy Center in 1972 in May, piano is pretty predominant, and that's Marvin. Marvin's playing the piano, and the 60s medley starts out. And it's real, real deep. That's all I can say. That's the reason why I explained that you just have to have this album, is because Marvin's, oh my gosh, just playing of that 60s medley. The first performance, concert performance that he's giving since Tammy Terrell has passed away in 1970, you understand it. That is exactly what you're hearing. You're hearing the first performance that Marvin Gaye gives. You're hearing from Marvin Gaye walking out onto the stage, approaching his instrument, sitting down, and we're doing this now. You're hearing it from note one. And it is all in the vein of, this is the first time he's putting himself outside of his comfort level that he has allowed himself to be in for the past 2 years. And the sound that we hear is it's only reflective of that. So like I said, that 60s medley is about 12 minutes long, and he ends it. Or maybe he doesn't completely end it, but very towards the end of it, he gets into his duets with Tammy, and he just sings them by himself. He doesn't have a female duet person with him. He's just singing that all by himself. Yeah. It's very, very deep, dude. It further proves what we discussed in episode 7. It's perfect. That's why I'm just saying, like, these conversations are flowing with such intelligence that I feel like they're divinely being given to me, and not a bragging element to that at all, but just an inspiration element to it. So he opens up this concert, you know, with this 12-minute medley from the 1960s, and you know why it's so deep is just, you just have to hear that 12 minutes. And like, if you don't kind of even hear anything else but those 12 minutes, that's a lifetime experience of live Marvin Gaye, okay? That's why it's not, you have to have it. It's not an option. If you are trying to get to like upperclassman level, you know, your senior, your doctorate level knowledge of Marvin, the 60s medley from the 1972 Kennedy Center concert, you've heard that. Okay. So here is, I'm still talking about Right On. Might not feel like I've been talking about Right On, but I am talking about Right On. The poorly written long article that I find online, that the only reason I'm forcing myself to continue through it is because of the factual information I'm gaining from it. Now, once we're at this Kennedy Center concert of this article, you know, they've given me these facts. It's 1972. It's Kennedy Center is, you know, Marvin's breaking it in. It's the only time that he performs the entire album live in concert. And here's the poorly written part. So I'll just, you know, preview it like that, prelude it like that. But they're like, so he was so stoned, right? Shut up. You know, that he accidentally started the album. He started once he got into playing the actual album, What's Going On. He accidentally started with the song Right On instead of What's Going On. Now, stop. Shut the fuck up and stop. Because I'm about wrapping this up now. You know, words that I said, I feel that the song Right On is Marvin Gaye's thesis for his album What's Going On. And to the degree that I am just stating that I would feel that if Marvin Gaye felt like he just was only going to be able to play you one song off of that album, he would play you the song Right On. There's no fucking way that when he was in the Kennedy Center giving concert of his album, his work of art, What's Going On, and he's deciding where he's going to start with delivering that work of art, why would he not start with his thesis? That's the way you intelligently deliver a message, convey a message. You start with your thesis and you elaborate upon that. An accident. That's what some people just, they can't. You know what I'm saying? They need to shut up. So he starts after this 12-minute 60s medley into the song Right On. There's an absolute reason for that. Jan Gay had a recalling some of her very first pre-meeting Marvin, what really grabbed her attention, what really, I'm paraphrasing, shook her, piqued her curiosity and interest about Marvin Gaye. He sings a lyric in this song called Right On from the What's Going On album, first song on side B of that album, which gives it a beginning, because you've had to flip the record over, and so now it is the message of the second side of that album. It is the only second song on that album that does not segue. The other song on the album, What's Going On, that doesn't have segue is the song What's Going On, because it's the first song on side A. There's a reason why another song on that album that has no segue, that is its own standalone message, it is the beginning of the continuous flow of messaging, is the song titled Right On, which is song 7 on the album and is 7 minutes and 10 seconds long. It's written by only Marvin and one other man. It is the longest song that Marvin Gaye has recorded in his career up to that point. And it is the most unique song of Marvin Gaye's entire catalog. There, I said it.
Because I'm going to go back to the questions. These are, I can't even answer these questions, okay? I can't answer these questions, but I can ask them. What is that song? What is the form of that song? Is it an opera? Is it an opus? Is it a symphony? What instruments are being played on that song? What is the form of that song? What is that song talking about? But all of that is our first exposure, deeply diving into what was originating for however long inside of Marvin Gaye. And the first time that he drops a project that is all him, it's at expert level because that's what he is, but he dropped expert level knowledge on us of being able to handle who he is as his own unique artist. His own, I'm now just finally producing a piece of art for you that I have completely generated. It's all my vision. Yes, we've already discussed the co-writing and collaborating process. And yes, I have to have the Detroit Orchestra available to create the sound that I'm making. But like I, Jessica, have already explained, that's done when Marvin says it's done. Once the Detroit Orchestra is done playing is when they have created the sound that Marvin needed to hear. That was what Marvin had in his head that had originated inside of Marvin, and then they were able to convey, okay? It's all Marvin. You can't play the harp and the cello, perhaps. Perhaps, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? My mind is blown at seeing my man at this piano breaking it down the way that he was. It just, at a level, it was like, damn, dude, I didn't know Marvin could play the piano like that. I've seen him play it before, but I didn't know that he had the skill level that he did at it. So yeah, I'm going to just like wrap it up again, but tying it into, you know, there's limitations with, you know, what we're able to do with copyrighted music of musicians, right? I wish that like I had the permission from all of those in the powers that be over Marvin Gaye's music to understand that in my hands it would be completely safe, because there's nothing but honor, adoration, respect, admiration, appreciation that is ever available to show for Marvin Gaye. And I wish that I could be playing you this music as I'm talking to you about it. That's not where we don't have that capability. So it's always upon yourself to follow up and go experience it for yourself. But that's really the only way to experience Marvin. You have to take it in for yourself. Recommend it always directly into the ear. And I, you know what, let me even go so much further to say, like, I would please ask, can you get some Dr. Dre beats? You need something that is all the way over your ear, okay? Now maybe I'm pushing it, but I'm serious. That is, let me just explain that, and then I really will be wrapping this up. When I very first was able to get off of the record player and onto my own little portable disc player, because I told you about how, you know, back in those days they upped the game to little portable CD players. Well, the headphones that I was plugging into my little portable CD player were this brand called KOSS, K-O-S-S headphones. They were like the prelude to these Dr. Dre beats, but they were exactly that same shape. They were these humongous, completely over the ear, really thick ass, cushiony, nice, soft, just, but your ear was inside of those motherfuckers, okay? And you were not going to be disturbed from receiving the message. So that's all. They ran about 40, 50 bucks, okay? But I would just say then, once I was able to get the Dre beats, there's nothing like it. Maybe there are some other things. I've heard plenty of people say there's other things like it out there, but just something that is engineered to be giving you sound at a level. I will say, once I upped my game to some beats,
and I'm talking about the studio version because I have Beats Buds and I have it's I even tried the Beats that weren't quite so big. I started out with those, but they didn't fully cover my ear. I really do believe there's something about a musical experience with a headphone that is completely covering your ears simply because I guess that's the way I started my musical journey with headphones. You can't go from filet mignon to ramen noodles, okay? So I would just suggest over-the-ear cushiony earphone resources in order to fully experience your Marvin. But I would start with it on the studio released version. You're gonna clearly hear the lyric that explains to me why Janis is Marvin Gaye's soulmate. You know what I'm saying? She was already understanding my man on a level where it was like, what? You know what I'm saying? I heard you say that. And like, I need to now ask you, what does that mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, I find that so remarkable of the lyrics in the songs of Marvin Gaye that she could just point out that piqued her interest pre-meeting him. It's like, yes, Janis, yes. And then progress to hearing this concert at the Kennedy Center in 72, just so that you can hear that 1960s medley that he opens with. And then, very much on purpose, begins to deliver the album What's Going On, starting with his thesis, the song Right On. And he, very true to the studio released version of it, delivers that song. It is an excellent live rendition of the song. And you actually just hear him singing what you just heard him singing in the studio, singing it to you again live, and you're like, oh my gosh, Marvin means it. He's saying what he is saying, and he means it. And he presented it this way. Like, he's actually able to, because what is the form of the song? What does the song sound like? How long is the song? What are the words of this song? What are the instruments being played on this song? But guess what? He was actually able to do exactly that again. So, like, that's what I'm just saying. It is the most unique song in his catalog. And there's a reason for that, that it's his first unleashing of his origin creative artistic release of himself. And there's a reason why it sounds like that. So, yeah, I'm going to wrap this up. I'm going to tell you to enjoy that. And I believe that where we're going to go next, we'll flip over to side A. We'll dive into some side A, what's going on. All right, guys, appreciate you listening and talk to you next time.
Well, friends, that's it for this episode. Did we have fun? I had fun. Subscribe to our show so you never miss the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye. And we're excited to announce that you can follow us on Pinterest at our page, pinterest.com/MarvinGaye_enduring_gifts. There, you can see our gorgeous picture boards for each podcast episode, among many others. These boards are full of images of Marvin capturing key moments from each episode. We're making this a listening and viewing experience for you. So until next time, thank you for listening.